Hello and welcome to Mike's Sci-Lab Podcast, episode 136, for the 3rd of August, 2017.
The title of the novel refers to the temperature at which paper, and thus books, burn.
Well, hello, welcome to another week of news from the Google group and other places as I find them. And if you're wondering about the start, then have a listen at the end of the podcast if you don't know the answer already. So let's dive into the group. I've mentioned about the benefits of doing group orders. Richard's post about a mouser order is sort of typical of that. If anyone wants free delivery, he says, on anything ordered from Mouser, he was going to place one. And so also said he was going to order some LoRaWAN chips, the RN2483 that we use in the Things Network modules. If anyone wants to know anything more about the Things Network, we have a separate group, which is TVTTNUG, standing for Thames Valley Things Network User Group, modelled around a similar description for the 3D printer group set up, which was TVRepRapUG. Anyway, that order was placed. I added some bits to it via email rather than via the group, so I'm sure others might have done the same. And Mouser are a very comprehensive supplier of electronics and stuff, similar to RS and Farnell here. Based in the US. And I mentioned last week about a wand that Tony had created, and it seemed to be for a jamboree, and Derek posted up saying, brilliant, thank you. And they're going to a camp, so it'd be good to see some pictures of it in action if you have any. And then again, follow up on the just waving a thing where Ian was pointing to an eBay post, and Toby talking about a CNC lathe would be a nice tool to have in the space. Andy N posts a link to another eBay auction, which is also finished, for a spot welder. But it seems there were no bids on that, which I guess Andy was sort of suggesting it'd be a nice thing to have. And we've talked about it before, I think it would be a good thing to have. A number of projects where some spot welding would have been exactly what I needed. Particularly to do with putting bits of metal, tacking them back together where they've come apart. I just had something today, a grid or thing that goes in the microwave to lift it up, and one of the bars has come adrift, and that's been spot welded, but then it's been chromionized, so may not be able to work that way, because I think that the spot welding heat probably would destroy any chrome elements, or may not even work. It's something perhaps I'll have to ask. But maybe discussion. And I think probably it would be one of the things on the list of wish list, which I think is on the wiki, if I'm not mistaken. But funny, there was no bids, so I don't know whether the price was just too high, whether there was a reserve and it doesn't show bids on eBay. Not sure about that. An interesting question. Otherwise, maybe a bid of a pound might have got it. I actually looking at the eBay thing again. There was a starting bid was £50, so that would be the reserve, but that seemed a pretty good price. So I've just asked about whether it was a bid, or what the reason for the post was, whether we need more votes as a tool. Not sure it's necessarily being done on here, but maybe on a spreadsheet. Oh, so Simon Green post about the vinyl cutter, with some discussion about the vinyl cutter and whether anyone had an experience of using one with a registration. And he concluded saying he was going to order a Circuit Air 2, which has quite a lot of facilities. Looked an interesting one. So nice to see Simon posting up with a bit of a review of it. He says, what a cracking tool. I got the Circuit Explore 2 so far, had no troubles working with it. You cutting vinyl, cotton, poster board, cardstock and paper. The print and cut workflow using printed registration marks just works. The pen system for drawing is also brilliant. The only thing I can fault it is it has a reduced working size when using cut and print due to the head size and losing space to larger registration marks. I've had no trouble at all getting from Illustrator into its software. I really like the loading system it uses. You load the media either onto a 12x12 mat or 12x24 mat, which is tacky and holds the material down flat. Obviously, you can't do large vinyl cutting work, such as a roller plotter can do. However, that's not its target market. For medium and small homemaker projects, it's absolutely fantastic. I recommend it. He said, if anyone would like a demo, he can arrange a show and tell. So that's something which hopefully he'll advertise in enough ahead of time that we can get along and have a look. I'd be interested. He also talks about ironing freezer paper on the back of cotton, and then you can pass it through an inkjet printer and print whatever you like. I had a second sheet of freezer paper onto the cotton on the other side, I guess on the other side, and you have a stabilized on both sides, which makes cutting with a drag knife cutter like the circuit really easy. So, not quite sure. What I didn't quite understand from it is exactly what you would do with cotton. I'm imagining either cotton jeans, for instance, in which case you could make a patch, which could be interesting, or cotton t-shirts, and I'm not quite sure what you do with a t-shirt cutout. But certainly, perhaps if it would do jean material, then making patches, and I suppose, yes, you could then do various patterns with a very light bleach and give it a wash, for instance. But then there's the ironing on side, as Tony did, where ironing on the vinyls, which actually melt into the cotton. So, I'll ask Simon, if probably listening, about the actual idea. Or I suppose I can check the Circuit 2 website. I'm sure they've got a number of videos about how to use the machine. I'm sure there's some tutorials on that. If we're going to have one at the space, if that's the suggestion, that the vinyl cutter be changed or maybe supplemented by such a machine, then something I'll certainly get genned up on. But the other thing I noted and heard this week was he mentions the word cracking, and there was apparently a tweet that had to be removed, and the owner was banned for 24 hours from tweeting because they used the word cracker, referencing a joke by a TV comedian whose tagline used to be, "What a cracker." And sort of also a joke. And another post that confused me a bit, DZ says, "I made a piece to block some of the dust from the motor switch of the router with the hope that it will stop working less than it does at the moment." And I'm not quite sure exactly why the dust would stop it working, whether it gets jammed up or whether it somehow it catches the stop switch or it's an override, or I'm quite sure exactly. And he posts a picture, which is very helpful, and shows it filling it in. But it doesn't fill it in completely, I guess because you have to leave enough space for the blade to be running within the hole. But I don't quite understand how the disc bit works in terms of keeping it down, or why you might want to cut another one. Because one of the things he says is that he's put it into Dropbox, in the laser Dropbox folder, under our lab bits, because it's something, a piece you can cut. But I'm not quite sure why you would want to cut more of them for yourself. So whether it's to do with the different sized router bits that you can put. And this is actually on the router table where the router is mounted upside down. So he says he hopes it will help with dust reduction on the motor and part. And I think it just indicates I need to know more about the router table and the bits and pieces that are there. And Gavin asks about some rubber washers, 1-inch outer diameter, 5/8 inner. The sort you put in a flexi hose to the bottom of a bath tap. And I think it's a similar one to the ones they use on the hoses that go to washing machines, if I'm thinking correctly. Else, does anyone have any rubbers mate? Mate being spelled M-A-I-T, which is a sort of putty, I think, that is used to seal. It doesn't dry out and is used to seal up plumbing joints. And so Alex points to, or says there's some grey laser cuttable rubber stock material you might be able to cut one from, and that was in the supplies of stock. He sorts it out actually by using some plumber's mate, and he said a neighbour had an old pot of plumber's mate. He said, "Right up there on my list of least favourite substances, it is far more interested in sticking to your hands than the fitting." Yes, and I think it's because of the coating on a lot of these fittings, or the fact that they might be damp, being plumbing. But the bit about the laser rubber gets Tony to say it's there somewhere, but hidden due to the awful smell it creates. And I think that is a rather strange way. Security by obscurity, it would, comes to mind. But if we've got something, I mean, perhaps it just should have a warning on it that don't use it unless you've got really good ventilation going. I remember it was Simon who used it to create a rubber stamp with the R-Lab logo on it that could be used. We were, in fact, that brings it back. It was going to be used for the Hackspace passport system. I mentioned that a few podcasts ago, so it must be down in there. Maybe I'll put that up and see whether we've got gone any further with the idea of having an R-Lab Hackspace passport. And there's a couple of threads that got separated, I think, because someone replied to the email notification rather than using the website, which does the threading. And it seems if that happens, that it starts a new thread with a title and then RDG hack. So, but the discussion is really about what are the things that has come out of something like the hardware. And the open source hardware user group discussions, probably something that could be a topic for OSHCAMP when we go to Hebden Bridge, but which I'll come to later. It's about the licensing, and in this case, Jeremy asking about programming the NRF, and there are different hardware devices that you can use and software that will operate with them. J-Link is a standard which allows you to connect to the chip and do the firmware flashing, but it has to have a software element to it. And the ones that are discussed here are Edu Mini, and it's about the licensing and about the licensing of the software toolset, development toolset that's provided by Nordic and the license that goes with that. The differences being about whether they're for the education area or whether they're for non-commercial use just for development purposes, or whether they're available for commercial use, or whether you have to buy a much more expensive version just for the license side of it. And in this case, it's about using J-Link for doing debugging and the software rather than doing the flashing. But I think the principle of understanding the license applies quite widely. Often things are advertised with open IDE, but open doesn't necessarily mean that it's available and for all purposes. So understanding the license terms and conditions can be an important element of choosing which platform to make. I'm reminded of the Night of the Living Dead that was made as one of the first handheld home video camera films that became a commercial success, and the fact that the domestic video recorder of the time with a videotape was not licensed for use for making commercial films, and that to acquire a license from Sony in this case, if I recall correctly, to be able to use your video camera to make a commercial movie, you had to hire one because the models that came with that license weren't available for purchase and were priced in such a way that you would see many tens of thousands of pounds, not in the value of the actual hardware, but in the value of the license. And going off down another bit of a rat hole, it was good to hear that the license for MP3 has now expired, the patent, and so that is now available just at a time when I understand it's going to be superseded by a new and thus licensed standard. And of course, Apple have used different standards, AAC, for some time for similar reasons, although it's argued that it produces a better audio quality as well. And I posted up alerting people to Craft Council event coming up in October, for which applications for funding, £100, £200, or £300, or £400, is available depending on what activity is undertaken. It's an initiative called Makeshift Do, a program for craft and innovation workshops. And the idea is to get the public learning more about making. And in that cause, they're inviting Makerspaces to bid for a small grant and be a venue. There are some venues already offering partnerships such as the V&A, and you're able to use that if, depending on what sort of activity, craft activity, what you're offering. So I'm interested if members are interested in helping organise something. I should be looking at doing something ourselves with some of the other Reading groups, but it's not something I really want to undertake myself, having done them early evening. It did come together in the end, but there was a lot of work and activity involved, so I'd like a bit of support if I'm going to do it. So no one's come up with that, anything to help out yet, but hopefully I will before the 21st of August, when we have to put things together. And I mentioned that Carl was posting up about his project for creating the rotating chair, and its potential for acting as a 3D scanning chair. But technically, it's proving a bit of a challenge, and I think it's great to see some of those challenges described in a series of posts and some pictures that he's included. Some of the difficulties with the actual operation of the motor once it started, and the way that the bearing was held. Some of these difficulties had been anticipated by people who'd read through the post or seen him preparing the parts for it, using wood, in particular, the strength and stability of a wooden post support. And he said, indeed, that did happen. He then had to learn a skill of using the lathe to create and turn a wooden part of a very similar style, and the inclusion of a bearing, which he shows pictures of. He says, by the end of the project, I will nearly have used every single tool in the space. And I think that really shows the value of a makerspace. However many tools you might have at home, chances are you won't have that sort of tool that you need. But he shows the control unit connected to an Arduino and motor driver. So the electronic skills coming in, the mechanical elements, the working with gears, the working with bearings, and the fact you're going to have to take as much weight as the chair would take normally. And that's an additional challenge. So if you're undertaking a project, it's great to have a read through this thread. In fact, it'd be great to curate it. If we could form the basis of a post about a project, maybe on Hackaday or something. I suggest that Carl maybe writes it up and posts it across, or if not, somebody else, maybe somebody else who's a more technical, documented minded, might be able to put all the gory details into a nice post. But he says, not pictured is a photo interrupting encoder and wheel that I have yet for the chair. So lots more interesting bits to come along, and I'll keep you updated. And then you can have a look at it at the end. At the end, or if it goes on the Hackaday, then you'll be able to read the summary there. Oh, Design Spark, that's the other one. That would be a great place to put it. And I mentioned Hebden Bridge, and it's basically nearly 2 weeks of different geeky activity. And one of them is Chip Hack. What I think I mentioned before, the EdSAC challenge to recreate one of the original computers. There was one at Manchester University, I think, and one in the States. Was it Harvard? I can't remember now. They had two similar names. You had EdSAC and what's the other one? Oh yes, EdSAC and EdVac. It says the EdSAC was inspired by EdVac, but I'm not quite sure which came first. Need to do a bit more reading up. Anyway, the idea is to recreate it using the MyStorm FPGA, which is developed by a group including our friend Al Wood, who now at Surrey Enhance Hackspace, but was one of the developers of the open motion controller for the Thames Valley RepRap, used as the controller board and electronics. So he went on to work with LED lanterns for deployment in Africa, and is a leading light in embedded electronics development, and also at the Open Source Hardware User Group, who are organizing the events at, or some of the events at Hebden Bridge at the end of August, beginning of September. So although Judith here is just referring to the EdSAC challenge, there's lots of other things going on, and tickets should still be available. You could just do the weekend with a Oshkamp, or yes, Oshkamp, Open Source Hardware User Group Camp, or could take part in some of the other events, including the EdSAC Challenge. And further updates on the Shiboko Revival thread. Toby said, I've completely forgotten to add a connector for the Z Probe, but maybe a headphone connector probably be great. They asked about if anyone had any. So things are still working on, and people are looking forward to that becoming a regular tool. And Ben posted a link to Amazon. I was thinking it was going to be something to do with the Z Probe connector, but it's actually an anti-vibration washing machine mat. I guess that's something you put your washing machine on to stop it vibrating about. That's the sort of thing that you really need if you're in a flat. Anyway, so we'll await. In fact, if people would suggest, really, if people post a link, just say what the link's there for, because not everybody is going to be in a position to visit the link. And in this side, it's sort of a topic that probably came in an earlier thread or discussion. And it seemed to be a bit off topic compared with the Z connector, but that just happened to be where it slots into the thread post. Tom reminds and alerts people that he's starting his project, the August project, having returned on that today, and will be finished by the 8th. I will post updates as the thing progresses, he says. The thing in this case being his pimped out mobility scooter. He said the first day will most likely be testing, stripping and planning. And talking about mobility, Faye posts up, some of you may have seen us recently working on my power chair. I managed to destroy one of the bearings in the caster section completely. I finally got hold of new bearings and Marie and I fitted them today, and also replaced the other three bearings that were corroded but weren't completely destroyed. So she thanks Richard and Toby for helping get the old bearing out, and Toby for telling us the trick about bolt and washer. Not sure what the bolt and washer trick is, so I have to do perhaps a link in the hints and tips section of the wiki. I'm sure there's probably a YouTube video of the bolt and washer trick. Although that does remind me of a fairly off-colour joke, which I'm sure you probably know. And Gavin posted about a amplifier they were working on, and Matt was working on it, and wouldn't fit on the shelves I mentioned last week. Matt comes back and says, sadly, it broke again. I've pretty much given up on this project. If anyone wants an amplifier to work on, otherwise I'll think of some imaginative way of smashing it to bits or burning it. And as somebody had suggested to him that Pav was interested in amps, which he is, then he was going to offer it to him first, which he does. And talking of burning things, I posted up about a summer barbecue invite. Comes from, well, it's the people involved with PHP Barks, the programming language, which I visit their events. And, lots of very interesting things. I use PHP myself for some simple web dynamic web page creations, but learning that it's how it's the driving power behind WordPress is interesting, and the amount of work and job opportunities that learning the language allows, and hints and tips that various talks tell us about. Anyway, they arranged at Christmas a joint party with a couple of different geek groups from around Reading, including Reading Geek. Food was good, and it was a good evening, and I certainly enjoyed it. Some of the other Reading Geek people apparently felt it clashes the sponsorship by Austin Fraser, who sponsor the PHP events and provide their offices as a venue. They do it to help PHP, but they also are interested in meeting people as they are software developer recruiters, so it fits in with their commercial interests, and it's that clash between commercial and the open source and open and unsponsored nature of Reading Geek that can cause a clash of cultures. We have similar questions come up with events within our lab as well, where commercial interests are involved. So the invite for this is going out to all of the tech groups around Reading and further afield. And it's a barbecue, and it's going to be held at Austin Fraser's new offices, but above them. So their new offices are in the Thames Tower. They were previously in the Forbury Square. Now they're 11th floor of the Thames Tower. And on the top floor of Thames Tower is a semi-open garden area, with a lovely little venue where we had the 50 Game Changers event that I attended. Obviously, you have security and need to be escorted up there. So that doesn't make it something you can wander in and out of in the way that you can at venues such as the Walkabout. But on the 16th of August, they're holding this event. There will be people to meet, greet and escort people up. So we should be aiming to arrive 5:45 to 7 o'clock for the start. It'll probably go on for probably about till about 9 o'clock, I suppose. And be an opportunity to have a bit of a catered entertainment and talks, have a bit of a chat about what the different groups do, make a presentation so we can start teaching people about what the benefits of being an R-Lab member are, for instance. Probably be people there from people like where? Get my thoughts together. We're sending out the invitation to the various tech groups, and you're welcome to pass on the invite and generally promote what Reading does at the Tech Fund, as there's a large amount of activity when I sit down and think about it. So PHP Barks have put a sign-up page, which I linked to in the post, but there's also some sign-up pages for some of the other groups, such as the Open Data Group that Florian organises, and he's created a template. I'm just going to revisit. I got an email about that this morning. We might, if we want to, put our own R-Lab page up for sign-ups rather than people having to join the PHP Barks meetup group, which they might choose not to do, as it just means you get an extra amount of spam from meetup regarding the group, which can be a nuisance, I have to say, if you're not interested in the group and you only signed up to be part of the meetup for a single event. And Ben says, let's hope the weather is better on that day. Well, given the indoor-outdoor nature of the venue, it's very good. It was pretty windy on the 50 Game Changers evening. People were able to sit out there, but the catering, I think it'll be done by the Thames Tower catering crew. And more talking about burning things under the title Fahrenheit 451. Which is the name of a film and book, and I heard reference to it, funnily enough. It must, I don't know why, but there was on the radio, as I was in the car recently, there was a discussion about Fahrenheit 451 and some of the thinking behind it, giving it a book about a dystopian future society where books are banned and burnt. And the bit of audio I played at the beginning came from a site called Cliff Notes. And Cliff Notes does books and crib notes, I guess. Like crib notes, but Cliff's Notes. Cliff's Notes. CLIFFSNOTES .com. Talking about literature. And basically talking about the things that you need to know if you're doing your homework. You shouldn't be copying these things directly. And I just heard recently a discussion in Ireland about people, how they were getting around software that was intended to look out for plagiarized entries for university and other exams. But also the fact that people are using things like Mechanical Turk to pay, to employ people to write their theses and their essays that are submitted, and it's being tested by some of the exam boards actually interviewing people and asking them questions about their submission, because in some cases the entrant hasn't even read through or memorized the submission that they submitted. They just put it in, and it of course it gives them a good grades. But if they don't know anything about it, then that will come out in an interview. And so that's being used as a technique. Anyway, the notes here talk about, and the reason I was looking them up was I thought to myself, I'm sure Fahrenheit 451 might be the temperature that paper burns at. And indeed, that is. When I looked at the Wikipedia article, that doesn't actually get mentioned. So given that everything on Wikipedia must be true, I don't know whether Cliff Notes is true. But maybe I should add that to the Wikipedia article. Is it something I was looking for? And I can put a reference to this site as my reference. Anyway, the topic apparently wasn't what Gavin was intending to do with the bookshelves or the books on the bookshelf, but the bookshelf itself. And I mentioned a little while back to somebody that the bookshelf was going to obviously be looked at as one of the things that was it earning its keep for space. And the person, I can't remember who it was now, was somewhat horrified about that and exclaimed loudly. Hopefully they'll come back and post their exclamation in reply to Gavin, who was saying, I've been looking at the bookshelf this evening and wondering how often, if ever, some of the books are read. Certainly, I used one as a reference recently for doing some Linux work, and it was handy because although it's easy to put things up on the look things up on the internet, if you're trying to do the same thing at the same time, and certainly for cutting and pasting code, the internet is great. You can't do the same thing with a book. But I was looking up the particular options for a Linux command in an obscure piece of code that I needed to use a utility, and it proved the quickest way of doing it. I was able to quickly flip through, and there was an explanation around it which you don't necessarily get in the manuals, and sometimes I usually find it somewhere like Stack Overflow, but you've got to make sure it's the right version of the software and bits and pieces as well, and the book at least gave me the particular version that it was targeted at for illustration. Anyway, he says, how often, if ever, some of the books are read. I am sure that they have been brought in with the best of intentions, but fear they are simply gathering dust, and maybe someone else who doesn't... when there may be someone else out there, perhaps who doesn't have access to the web, who might get more use out of them. Don't get me wrong, despite my provocatively titled email, I am not proposing we burn them. It was there just to grab your attention. And my thoughts are that given the other subjects of the Fahrenheit 451 book, then it's an interesting, it could bring some interesting comments into the thread over and beyond the topic of whether we should have a bookshelf. So he says, I can see the value in books on radio and woodworking, but less in books on programming. What do people think? Is it time for a clear out? That was posted on the 31st of July. No responses yet. So if you've got thoughts, and I'm sure you have, about either of the topics, 451 or the books, check out the Fahrenheit 451 thread. And on that note, I shall say, Mike Tubby, signing off.